You're listening to Cards to the Moon, a podcast about trading cards from both a collector and investor perspective. We hope you'll stick around for the ride as we take a deep dive into the state of the hobby, share some hot takes, hopefully some useful advice and fun stories along the way. Hey guys, welcome back to Cards to the Moon. This is episode 199. My name is Clark from 5cardguys.com and 5cardguys on Instagram. With me co-hosting as usual is Hyung of Integrity Sports Cards. John's away for this episode, but we do have a special guest interview coming up that will play shortly. I'm betting many of you have seen his hobby content already. His name is Coach Ko, who is not just easily distinguishable by his mustache, but also by the many stories around the hobby he's able to dig up and then tell us about on social media. He's also a fellow Canadian collector, so that's another connection he has with us. But before we play that interview, off the top, another Canadian just got into the hobby. Well, kind of. I'm talking about Kevin O'Leary, aka Mr. Wonderful, who most know as an entrepreneur and one of the investors on the popular TV show Shark Tank. So he was on Instagram Live this past week, along with high-end collector Shine150, who we all know. And they actually opened a box of 2018 National Treasures First Off the Line basketball, which retails for about $15,000, you know?
Wow. Is that video available online? I didn't see it.
You didn't see it? Yeah, I think it is. I don't know if Lives are recorded. I'll double check. But I actually saw the tail end of it, like live.
What they pulled?
I didn't see that, but I was just like, they're just kind of looking at Shine's cards a little bit. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it was kind of cool to see. But anyway, in that live stream, O'Leary seemed to be genuinely interested in the trading card industry as a whole, and he might potentially start a business within the hobby, right? So that's something he was kind of discussing a little bit. So Hyung, what do you think of Mr. Wonderful potentially getting into the hobby space?
You know what? I could actually see him being lured into the hobby, because I think Kevin O'Leary is wonderful, like Mr. Wonderful. Like he's actually a boss, and you know, obviously he's very well respected in the business world. Mm-hmm. So he understands valuables more than anything, and he's a big watch collector as well. Right, so I don't know if you know that, but he's big time into watches. So and it's the same thing, you know, he sees watches as art piece. There's a lot of value in terms of scarcity. He understands that market really well. So, and I know that last year about this time, he did something with Ken Golden when I believe Ken showed him some Tom Brady Tom Brady contenders. I want to say auto.
Okay.
The PSA 8, and he started getting into it a bit back then. So yeah. I could see him transitioning into this space, just because the type of personality he is, and also he's big on collectibles and just scarcity mm-hmm. in general. So it would be great, I think, to have someone as big as Kevin O'Leary, because I mean, when it comes to dumping money into whatever company, that's the kind of right guy you want on board. Yeah. So anybody that's in it because they see the longevity and sustainability of the hobby, I think it just solidifies like why we do this podcast and why we believe in the sports card industry as a whole.
Yeah, totally agree with you. I was going to say the same thing. He already has that collector mindset. So that's not going to be a huge jump for him to, you know, to learn any kind of learning curve that's hobby related. And he seems to be a risk taker as well, right? Like with the different ventures he's invested in. And, you know, if you see Shark Tank, you know that he's pretty thorough in his research as well. So it's good that guys like Shine150, Ken Golden are educating him a little bit about the industry, and he's doing his research.
Well, they're in a little different tax bracket, I think. I think he doesn't know about the 99.9% of us in the rest of the hobby. You know, that, you know, very small fraction. You're looking at Shine's collection. Don't expect everybody to have that kind of collection.
Right. As long as he's realistic about that, yeah, for sure. But yeah, always good to see guys like Kevin O'Leary, business-minded people. Like, I always like to see people from kind of outside the hobby even getting into it, because I think that's just a signal for growth within the hobby itself when you see
absolutely new people like, come in. I kind of see this actually in the baseball industry too, because the whole baseball industry, we talk about this before, that it's run by, you know, good-hearted people, but they're baseball people at the end of the day. And if you're thinking about the future sustainability of any marketplace or any kind of industry, you want to have the right people running it so that it's around, you know, next year and the year after, or at least solidifies that kind of like marketplace. So I'm all for outside business people with passionate, interested people in the hobby. I think that's a good marriage for us. Yeah.
Agreed. All right. This episode has already kind of become Canadian centric, talking about Kevin O'Leary and now interviewing Coach Ko. So yeah, let's play that interview with Coach right now. All right, today we've got another great guest to the podcast. Like we said off the top of the show, his name is Coach Ko. You've seen him in all of your socials, I'm sure, because he is one of the most consistent hobby content creators out there. You can find him on Instagram at Coach Ko Collectibles, where he has thousands of followers. He's got his own podcast where he's interviewed several big names in the hobby, and he's traveled to a bunch of shows producing even more content, including at the most recent Topps Hobby Rip Night, where he shared the same stage as Mr. Tom Brady. You might have heard of him. I definitely want to talk about that experience, but without further ado, Coach Ko, welcome to the podcast.
Clark, man, thanks for having me.
Yeah, glad to have you. You know, we also mentioned at the top of the show, you're a fellow Canadian, so always great to have more representation from the North in the hobby. As far as Canadian content creators go, we've had Jeremy Lee on the program, so we're excited to talk to you, Coach Ko, today.
Amazing.
So first, we'd like to ask this question for all our guests. Can you start by giving us your story about how you got into the hobby?
Yeah, of course. So like a lot of people, the story runs, you know, fairly far back.
Okay.
I would say that my first introduction to the hobby was with Pokemon and actually, yeah, I'd say Pokemon cards.
Oh, interesting.
From like an actual card perspective. If we're talking sports cards, that was maybe a little bit further along. I would say I was maybe 10 or 11. And so I grew up in a predominantly Portuguese and Italian neighborhood. I'm Portuguese myself. And so the Euro and the World Cup were like a big deal for us. And so every one of these big tournaments, we'd go to our local convenience store and we buy the packs of stickers. I think they came in like 5 or 6 stickers in a pack. Mm-hmm. We buy those books, and the goal was to complete that book essentially like before the end of the tournament. And, you know, after buying enough packs of stickers and you have some doubles and you really down to like the last few, fortunately we had a pop-up, I don't even want to call it a show. It was like it's like at the back of a mall. It's called the Galleria Mall.
Okay.
And you'd go and there'd be all types of sports cards and TCG and memorabilia. There's a very, very small show set up every Saturday from, I think it was like 10 to 5. Mm. And that's where you would go to buy the individual stickers to complete your book. So I completed a few of those books.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, I think Pokemon was probably my first introduction to like cards. And then from the sports cards perspective, it was definitely soccer stickers. Right. It later transitioned into like McDonald's packs of hockey cards, Tim Hortons hockey cards. So for people who are listening who aren't from Canada, like, you probably have no idea what the hell we're talking about.
Right.
But they were like, it was a cheap way to get introduced to the hobby, right? It was like dollar packs. Yeah. It was something very easy for my parents to stomach because, I mean, they didn't want to put a ton of money into this like dinky little thing for kids.
Yeah.
And there wasn't a ton of value, but because of that, like a lot of the stuff that I grew up collecting was about like completing the set. Like for me, completing the set was everything. There were still like case hits, quote unquote. Like I distinctly remember in Tim Hortons hockey cards, there was like a clear cuts. And they were like one in every like 10,000 packs. And those were, you know, if you hit one of those, it was like a big deal. I wasn't concerned with the value of them, just completing the set.
Yeah.
And yeah, so like that's, I come primarily from like a set collecting background. And then, like I said, like TCG was like, it was all, it was like having the best stuff and what works, what doesn't work, continually building off that like core deck or whatever the case may be.
Yeah.
But yeah, man, that's kind of like my origin story. Yeah.
No, I don't know why, but I've never took you as a set collector. So that's that surprised me. And you're just talking about sticker books. That brings me way back to, I did the same thing with hockey, with the Panini hockey sticker books. And same thing. You get to the last few and, you know, there's moments where you just open the pack and they're all doubles.
I mean, there's a lot of moments like that, especially like towards the end, you're like, and then it becomes like, what am I doing, right? Like, I can't keep opening packs. Like, I'd rather just buy the thing, even if it's like 5 or 10 times what a pack would be.
Yeah.
I mean, I've just ripped 15 packs in order to try to get that one card anyway.
True, exactly. I, you know what I ended up doing was, you could actually write, like back in the day, you write mail to them and then they deliver it back to you.
And that's
how I actually completed the set. But
I love that.
But we talked about being fellow Canadian collectors, and you talked about Tim Hortons cards. Obviously, we're big into hockey cards as well. And I just saw your interview. I know it's recorded of several months ago, but the one you did with the Chase, David Adams, the Chase, and you talked about something that we actually totally agree on, which is that hockey cards, compared to other sports cards, has a ways to grow in regards to collectability. Right? For example. While we complain, or I complain, about there being just too many parallels in baseball card and basketball card sets, the opposite is kind of true for hockey cards, where you just don't see that many parallels, you know? And you know, that means that there's no real chase factor or excitement or buzz. Yeah. Until recently, of course.
I'm like, imagine that, right? Like, it's very different now with Connor Bedard and... I mean, exactly. they've added outburst parallels. They added the red outburst. Mm-hmm. They added a deluxe even. So like completing a rainbow has never been more fun, I think, for hockey card collectors.
Agree, 100%. So yeah, I just want to get your general thoughts on just the collectability of hockey cards now in general. And I know you've gone to shows in the States. Yeah. And I asked this similar question to Jeremy when he was on the pod. Do you see more interest in hockey cards within the American population, or is that still, early stages?
Yeah, so I had I was fortunately at the Philly Card Show this past weekend, and Philly they have a pretty good hockey town. They have like Jersey's not very far. You've got like New York is not very far either, which are all pretty big hockey markets.
Yeah,
and so I saw more hockey at a U.S. show than I have in a very long time. Like I felt very much at home there. I saw dollar boxes like for like hockey cards, and I was just having an absolute blast. And then on top of that, like we had the Connor Bedard hype last weekend, right? So from what I saw last weekend, hockey was the most popular it's ever been. There were many people going around from table to table asking for Connor Bedards.
That's cool.
And it was a pretty surreal experience. And like, if we're talking like collectability in the hockey market, obviously so much has changed since that interview with the Chase.
Yeah.
Like I said previously, the rainbows have expanded dramatically, where like you've got your usual clear cuts and you've got your usual, actually it's not even usual like that. Even the clear cut came 2016, right? So Upper Deck is continuing to add different parallels. I think we're up to like 8 or 9 if we include like the jumbo in there, of variations for a young gun. And I think that there's going to be a lot of fun, you know, if you go outside of the Bedard. I mean, it depends on what your bankroll is, but
right.
You know, if you have a guy that you're PCing in like this set or an upcoming set, it's probably never been more fun to chase the one of one, chase the out of 25 outburst, chase like the deluxe. Like there's just so many different options now.
Yeah, no, agreed. You know, kind of a follow-up to that. Do you think we'll get to the point where we're like, maybe there's too many parallels now? You know, like the Panini Select, we've talked about in a previous podcast episode where if you're a football card collector, or even a basketball collector, the selector. We just lost track of how many parallels there are. Do you think we'll get to that point, or are you not worried about that?
That's a good question. I think there's people that are already pissed off with how many parallels there are.
Sure.
You know, like, I think that it's always, it's like a yin and a yang almost. You know what I mean? There's always going to be opposing, I guess, like, points of view.
Yep.
And ultimately the market will decide, you know, what it likes, right? If there's too many parallels, I'm sure they'll scale back. If there aren't enough parallels, I'm sure they're going to want to add more. Mm-hmm. But I think that the hockey is a very, very, like, it's not even close to baseball or basketball or even football.
Sure.
So I think for the time being, it's been a nice little addition, and I hope they don't go too crazy. And I mean, I think anything less than 15, I think, is probably good. You know, like, at the minute you start coming over 15, it's like, all right, sure. Like, enough is enough almost, you know?
Yeah, yeah. I would agree with that too. We talked about Connor Bedard mania, of course, with the Upper Deck Series 2 being released just last week. What do you think it's done in terms of getting people interested in hockey cards? Do you think it's a first step towards getting people more interested in hockey cards in general? Or do you think this is just like a Connor Bedard thing, you know, with the one-of-one, $1 million bounty by David Adams? Do you think it's specific to Connor Bedard, or do you think this is kind of a good sign for, you know, hockey card collectors in the future?
Yeah, so fortunately, I actually had a conversation like just like this with Josh Madigan over at Hockey Cards Gong Show. A shout out, Josh, and Hockey Cards Gong Show.
Nice.
It's funny. I think this all started with Laffy. I think that
okay,
during the pandemic, more people ripped hockey than probably ever before, because all the other products were inaccessible, and hockey was very cheap in comparison to basketball and football.
True.
And so I know a lot of Americans and people who were not necessarily into hockey cards that were ripping, was it 2020 Series 1, I think it was, for Laffy. And I remember his Young Gun being, you know, kind of where Bedard is now, so like the 300 range,
right?
And it just never really panned out, but I saw this hype before, so I think that this was a natural progression when we had a guy who was actually playing to his potential. Like, I think Connor Bedard this season already has more points than Laffy had at any point in a previous season. And so he also just had like 5 points in 2 games, which, again, just like all he's doing is like padding the lure, you know what I mean? Like
the hype. Yeah, for
exactly.
Sure.
Exactly. So, but I do think that a lot of these people are in for just Connor Bedard. Like, I don't know if that money is going to get translated into other players. I think maybe during playoffs, and this is like another thing that I talked about, is like a month from now, Connor Bedard will be pretty much irrelevant. Like, in terms of like from a playing hockey on a day-to-day basis, right?
So
those people that might be tuning into the NHL for the first time to watch him because maybe they pulled his card, or, and he's doing great things, like I said, 5 points in the last 2 games, but come playoff time, his Blackhawks are not going to be there.
Yeah.
And they're not going to play again until November, right? Well, October, whatever it is.
Yeah.
So he's going to become pretty irrelevant. So I think that the one thing that we can hope for as people who collect hockey cards would be that people have the interest in hockey now and they follow along for the playoffs, because I've also heard multiple people tell me that like hockey is the best game to watch, like live, for instance.
Yeah.
And so, and these are people who don't even really like know anything about the NHL, but they're like, I'll tell you one thing, like hockey's the best sport to watch live. And I'm like, I love that.
Yeah. For sure.
I mean, hopefully that translates into like a higher viewership for playoffs, and naturally higher viewership means that some players that might not be watched every day, so maybe some guys from the West Coast, or, you know, guys on like a Carolina or a Boston, or that they start to get some hype. And we see these swings during the playoffs. Like, I mean, Matthew Tkachuk last year went on a parabolic run, and he plays for Florida, and no one really gives a shit about Florida, right?
So
there's always going to be stuff like this. I think that with the interest in Bedard, we're probably going to see maybe a little bit more volatility. during the playoffs. But I think it'd be most interesting to see what happens to Connor Bedard's cards in like October, November next year.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. Yeah. And everything you mentioned made sense for sure. And I hope it translates, even if it's like a few percentage points to people really appreciating hockey. You know, I still think that it's a really, this might sound crazy to some people, but, or Canadians certainly, but I feel like Connor McDavid's undervalued. You know, we talk about generational players. Like he is one of them.
Sidney Crosby.
Crosby, like, another good one. Yeah.
It's criminal. It's like legitimately. The guy's won 3 Stanley Cups, I think. And like,
yeah. Captain Canada.
You cannot have the 2000s generation of players without Sidney Crosby, right? Like,
yeah.
So I think he's criminally undervalued. And like, even if you look his stuff up side by side with Connor McDavid, like, I know Connor McDavid has a ton of individual accolades, but like,
yeah.
Sidney Crosby came back from multiple concussions, bro. And like, he's on pace to score, I think, the most goals he's scored in like 10, 15 years. Like, the guy's just not normal. Like, people thought after Matt Cook hit him, he was done.
Yeah, right.
And this was during the time of like, no one knew anything about concussions. I mean, they still don't, but like, he was the poster boy for concussions, right? Yeah, like,
true.
And I just don't think we understand, like, we truly appreciate like Sidney Crosby. I agree. I think Sidney Crosby's too cheap. I think Connor McDavid is probably too cheap, especially if you're throwing that kind of money around for Connor Bedard, right? Like, I think guys like Mikko Rantanen are too cheap. Like, Braden Point is too cheap. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's a lot of guys where if we start naming off like who's too cheap, like, I'm gonna go on a rampage.
this episode will be too long.
I'm gonna go on an absolute heater. Like,
love it.
Brock Faber's cards the same price as like.
Yeah, it's crazy.
Victor Hedman. I was like, oh, what are we talking about here?
It's crazy. Well, one of my co-hosts, John, who's a big Crosby guy, he's saving up for like one of the SP Authentic Future Watch autos. Yeah. So he probably wants us to stop talking about him so he can still afford it a year down the line. But yeah, Crosby definitely criminally undervalued, as you say. Totally agree with that. All right. I wanted to speak about Topps Hobby Rib Night that you attend at Citi Field, a home of the New York Mets. I've been there to watch a game, actually. I'm also a big-time baseball card. I'm more of a baseball card collector, funny enough, still being Canadian. Maybe it was because of the Blue Jays' success in 92-93. You know, I was right in the middle of that, so that got me excited. But I've been to Citi Field, beautiful ballpark, and you were there recently, of course, for Topps Hobby Rib Night. I want to know how that came together, you know, in terms of, like, what got you there and, you know, even being able to share the same stage with Tom Brady, that interaction. Yeah, just curious to see how you got to that point. It was cool to see.
Yeah, it was it was kind of like one of those moments where like everything just kind of came together. I had developed a relationship, and I still have like a lot. I have some relationships with shops in the United States through like a lot of my travels and just like meeting really good people. And one of them happens to be Al from Skybox. Shout out Skybox.
Yeah.
Collectibles. And they're out in Connecticut. And he was already doing Topps Hobby Rip Night at Citi Field. They had chosen Citi Field despite the fact that it was about an hour away from their hub, which is in Connecticut. Just because they thought that a bigger venue and would be more fun for, you know, other members of the community who might not get the opportunity to come out to Connecticut and kind of see what they're all about. And the original plan was to have Dylan Harper there, who's one of the top college prospects top high school prospects in the country for basketball. And so we were already talking about me coming down and helping with some of the content creation side, just to make sure that everyone knew what was going on and that there was an accurate representation of like what was happening there.
Sure.
And I obliged. I was like super excited to do so. And then probably about 3 or 4 days, I would say 4 days out, he called me and he said that Topps had contacted him and said that Tom Brady was coming.
Okay.
And
wow.
And I was like, well, I mean, I was already coming before, so like I'm definitely coming now.
yeah.
And again, like, the original plan was to just like come in and like create content and to just like be there and which was awesome. And they had brought in Alex Gimo to do a lot of the emceeing, so I was like, oh, this is fantastic. And there was a few opportunities that arose where You know, they actually wanted the second person on the microphone, and so they, you know, they were like, "Hey, like, do you want access to this?" And I was like, "Well, yeah, of course I do." You know, yeah. Like, this is a crazy moment. So I really just kind of took the mic and ran with it.
Nice.
And yeah, so we ended up putting it on for Tom Brady. It was, and more importantly for the community, there were so many kids that showed up, and that's what like the hobby rep nights are all about. It was amazing. When he first got there, they told us that he wasn't going to sign anything and there wasn't going to be any pictures, and we were obviously okay with that.
Sure.
But you know, as the night progressed, and he was only there for probably like 30 minutes, but okay. He was signing like everything for these kids, and it was just like watching these kids amazing. Light up was just unbelievable. And some of the trades he was making, like he was trading base cards for like their base cards for like Tatum RPAs.
And, oh my gosh.
Like it was yeah, honestly, like I was like, this is incredible. Like this kid just got like a $1,100 worth of right. stuff for a base card of I don't know, like Jordan Alvarez or something.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? Like but again, like, that's kind of what it's all about, right? Like it's like
sure.
you know, putting cards into the hands of these kids and starting their collections off. And you know, so much of the hobby has become like, let's say, like unsustainable for the average person. Mm-hmm. And especially when it comes to like from a family perspective.
Right.
Yeah. Box prices, especially with flagship stuff, are not as high as some of the premium products and still mm-hmm. somewhat affordable. But, you know, I look to the way that I started with hockey cards, and like I just told you that I was buying McDonald's packs and Tim Hortons packs because like that's all my parents were willing to kind of contribute.
Yeah.
And so, you know, this was kind of like one of these moments for these kids where, you know, you might normally get those Topps Big League or, mm-hmm. you know, maybe like a hanger box for a special occasion. But like you just inherited from Tom Brady, like a $1,200 yeah. card. Right. So,
yeah.
And that's like a moment that these kids are never going to forget, I'm sure. So, yeah, that's kind of how it all came together. And
yeah,
it was awesome. It was pretty surreal, truthfully.
Yeah, I'm sure it was. And yeah, like to your point, even more than the card that the kid was getting, I'm sure the experience of getting it from Tom Brady is the bigger thing. You know what I mean? Like that's a 100%. Story to tell all your friends growing up.
Yeah. I had like dads come up to be like, my life has changed. Right. My kid got to trade with Tom Brady. You know what I mean?
Yeah. Like, amazing. And I'm
like, that's unbelievable. Like that is going to be telling the story about his kid. At every party he goes to, exactly. You know what I mean? Like, watch out for sure. Christmas because, like, that's his opener.
So, yeah, that was great. Totally. Well, amazing. Well, it's kind of a segue to my next question, you know, with Topps Hobby Rib Night. Of course, it's Fanatics that's been involved and doing a lot of the marketing in the hobby space. I know you're at the Philly show this past week and Michael Rubin was there. I saw that on social. I saw that you were able to meet up with him and he's famously says he wants to 10X the hobby. How do you think things have gone so far ever since Fanatics really took over, really came into the hobby space?
I think from a marketing perspective, it's been unbelievable. I think mm-hmm. that more people are talking about sports cards now than probably ever before.
Agreed.
You know, it's just like from the creative decisions that are making for some of the commercials, like the Tom Brady Bowman commercial that was aired, I think on actual television. You know, just seeing some of the partnerships take place with like MLB and the pushes from like players to start their own collections and to have, you know, like Randy Johnson's got his own like photograph cards now, you know, like it's just like, it's like whatever the Kevin Hart situation with like the tiny Kevin Hart on some of the
that's cool
Phillies
too,
cards.
Yeah.
Like there's just so many talking points. And I think that is, you know, kind of what you want if you're, mm-hmm. if you want to market to everyday people, you know, like I think he's making cards cool. You know, Kevin O'Leary was ripping a box of cards literally like 2 days ago.
Yeah.
So like there's interest, like there's a lot of interest and it's some of that interest doesn't necessarily have to do with dollar figures, right? Like, I mean, I know that we get told bounties and all this other stuff, but I think a lot of people are just kind of intrigued by maybe this hobby and how it's been able to go undetected for a long time, man. Like,
sure.
And so I'll say that about the marketing. Now when it comes to like some of the other things, like the quality control. I mean, there's been a few times where they just haven't gotten it right yet. Like they missed the stamping on the first card. Right. Yeah. And that was like an advertised parallel. And so they really kind of missed the boat on that one. I think they printed the two super fractors back with Bowman 2023.
Yeah.
So I think that also was like kind of the ball was dropped there. So there's like, there's definitely a lot of room for improvement.
Sure.
But I think that, their heart's in the right place. As long as prices don't go nuts, I like where things are right now.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, people that listen to podcasts, we've been, this is season four for us, so we've been doing it for about 3+ years on a weekly basis, and we've seen it where it has come from, even within the 2021 hobby hype, into where it is now with things settling down. But we've always really appreciated what Fanatics has done for the hobby, and we agree with you in terms of like people talking more about sports card. That's certainly gone up, you know, ever since Fanatics came into play. And the thing about, you know, quality control issues, I feel like there's always been quality control issues in the hobby, but yeah. There seems to be a little bit, at least more accountability, right? Yeah. Fanatics has owned up to some of those mistakes, you know, paying bounties for those double super fractors.
I mean, they did. They paid bounties for super fractors. They offered that for like 6 months. They also, I mean, they immediately came out and said like, we didn't stamp these. Like
exactly.
If you find one that hasn't been stamped, send it to us. We will personally stamp it and we'll give you a rebate of some kind, right? So
for sure.
I think that like they've definitely corrected these mistakes. Like the next step is to just like kind of not have them happen though, right?
Right.
I mean, those are both pretty big things, like truthfully. Like, and they're both related to one of ones, and one of ones are usually pretty big chases in products. Mm-hmm. So
yeah.
I think I think that there's definitely room for improvement. And I mean, if you guys follow my content and you follow my content, like I'm always gonna say that there's a good side and a bad side, and you know, it's like we need to fall somewhere in between.
Yeah.
So I'm not gonna sit here and just be like, oh yeah, they've been amazing, and then there's nothing wrong. Like, there's definitely been problems, but I hope that they get fixed.
Yeah, for sure. And that's why I like your content, because you do call people out when they need to be called. And like I said in the introduction, you dig up a lot of hobby news. Like sometimes I hear news about the hobby from you because you were able to surface it, and then, you know, everyone has their own takes on it, so that's kind of been really useful for us in terms of finding news about the hobby. So appreciate the work that you do.
I appreciate that you telling me that, man. That means a lot to me.
Yeah, and you know, and this is my last question before we get into a rapid fire segment, but you know, I can see from your background you're also into fitness and you know, which I'm sure takes some of your time as well. So I'm wondering, for other aspiring content creators out there, how do you manage to consistently produce the hobby content, you know, coming up with all the different videos and the reels while balancing your time with what you do outside of the hobby?
That's a great question. I think that it's really easy when you find stuff that you're passionate about. Nice. And I think I've worked really hard to create a life where I really don't do anything that I haven't chosen to do, right? Mm-hmm. And I guess we all make choices every day, but I know exactly, you know, like there are times where I'm exhausted and I don't want to make content, for instance, you know, or like I maybe don't want to work out or don't want to do something, but I'm like, well, I have to, because this is what, like, I might not want this right now, but I want to build this momentum. I want to continue to provide for the community. So I think that I also think balance is subjective. I think that you kind of have to make time, right? Yeah. Like it's not always going to be like, oh, I'm going to omit something. Like sometimes you just have to add, and eventually it gets easier, right? Like I know for myself, like my workday starts at like 5:30. And so in order for me to make content, like I have to make content before that. Right. So like, I could sleep in, or I could just like build that content side, right? Mm. So I think that once you understand why you do what you do, it's really easy to make the choice, even if it's hard. And in fact, like making the hard choice is often the best choice, because you really kind of figure out what you're made of. And yeah, man, I'm all about just pushing yourself and finding fulfillment. And so I just think it's once you know, it's very easy to keep pushing.
Yeah. Nice. Great advice. And I totally agree with you about balance being subjective, because I've run into people, like when I talk about what I do, similar to you in terms of hobby content creation, but they think there's one right answer. I was like, no, it's whatever you can give. You know, for me, when I had my, I used to be a journalist, and then I used to be a digital marketer, and you have your 9 to 5 at the time. And then I just did my hobby content from 9 p.m. to 2 in the morning, because that's what I want to give. And, you know, to get to a certain point, you just have to be committed to that. And for others, you know, they need that sleep. That's fine too. But just kind of pushing your own boundaries. I think that's great advice.
You're just never going to be like, you're not going to be able to do something different unless you do something different. Right. Like, so
it's,
and if you want a different life than everybody else, then you have to choose different things than everybody else. So like, I would say that, like, if you're someone who has to put in that like 9 to 2 after putting in a 9 to 5, again, like, if as long as you know what you're doing, like in terms of like, I thoroughly enjoy talking about this, or I thoroughly enjoy the content creation perspective, or aspect of it, then it's a lot easier to like, okay, one more day, right? And eventually you actually get way more efficient at, like, from like 9 to 5, it's like, now it's 9 to 2, it's like 9 to 12 and 9 to 11:30.
Right.
You know what I mean? Like, it's like, you can actually shorten the amount of time by continuing to improve. So the beginning is always gonna be the hardest part. When I tell people all the time, when it comes to creating content or starting anything, the hardest part is just starting. Like, stop overthinking it. Stop looking and, you know, gathering more information and any of this, like, just start. Because if someone were to tell me that, like, when I first created my first piece of content, that this is where I would be, I would have no idea what the hell you're talking about,
right?
And how I even got here, right? And like, it just happens, but it only happens if you actually have action.
Great words of advice. So funny, Jeremy Lee said the same thing. He's like, you just got to start. You know, just start is the hardest thing to do. So totally agree with you there, 100%. All right. Again, thank you for your time. I just wanted to finish as we do with all our guests, some kind of rapid fire questions. And I always like to start with this one because I'm genuinely interested. What's your favorite card you currently own?
That's a great question. I am going to go ahead and say I picked up a Bowman's Best Atomic Refractor of...
Hear that? Believe it or not, summer is just around the corner. Luckily, Armor All, America's most trusted auto appearance brand, has what your car needs to get that perfect summer shine. Plus, now through May 31st, we'll give you $5 for every $20 you spend on Armor All products. That means car wash pods, protectant, tire shine, you name it. Find out how to get your $5 rebate at armorall.com. Armor All, less work, more clean. Terms apply.
Allen Iverson. And he's my favorite basketball player of all time. Recently picked it up at the Bay Area Card Show, which is wild, actually. And I think that's my favorite card. It's beautiful. Normally copies have like greening and stuff of that nature. I'm a big Atomics guy, so like Atomics are my favorite parallel ever.
Yeah.
And so it just hits me in my feels.
Nice. And you're up in the 76ers hat right now during this interview. So
nice.
Do you have a Grail card you're currently chasing?
I'd love to get my hands on a PSA 10 Ronaldo Mega Cracks
one day.
But that's probably the grail for myself.
Makes sense. Yeah. With your Portuguese background. Yeah, it makes total sense.
I've got a few lower grades, but nothing that high.
Nice. Most interesting guest you spoke to in the hobby, either on your pod or just at card shows?
Oh, that's a tough one, man. I got a lot of good ones.
We're just one of them, I guess, because you do have a lot for sure.
I do, but I'm really trying to like dig deep for this one. I think the Card Carver was one of my favorite shoes.
Oh, like, interesting.
Yeah. He was. He shared a lot of stories about his collecting journey and like how it kind of translated to art. But some of the coolest stuff he talked about was how a family member of his actually played for. And he might kill me if I get this wrong, but I'm pretty sure it was, it might have been the Brooklyn Dodgers. And so, like, we're talking about like the like early 1900s. Yeah. And like he's been amassing stuff from like his debut. And so like I think he's got a Game News Uni. Like it's
nice.
It was just one of the most fascinating conversations because like it's someone who actually has ties to like vintage baseball. And I was like, man, this is like amazing. between your art and this story, I'm like, man, I just can't get enough of this conversation.
Yeah. Nice. Very personal too, for sure.
Yeah.
All right. We have to ask a hockey question. Do you think Ovechkin breaks the all-time goal record? And do you collect any of his rookie cards?
Yeah, I've got... So I'm trying to build out the entire 05, 06 set. So yes, okay. I have an Obi rookie. I do think he breaks it. I think it's probably going to take him about 3 years to do so though.
Me too.
Which... I mean, if you're accumulating, like you can, there's lots of time.
Yeah. That's good advice.
Yeah. I do think though that Austin Matthews breaks his if he can stay healthy.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. I like that.
Yeah.
We said in the pod, Ovechkin's going to retire only when he breaks the record.
He's a stubborn, like, he's not going anywhere. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, that guy will be on. He'll bring a cane out there if he needs to. He'll pull a Jaromir Jagr.
Yeah. He'll play until he's as old as Jagr. Yeah. And last question. This is kind of anticlimactic because you did talk about him a little bit. I want to get your thoughts on fellow Canadian Kevin O'Leary, a.k.a. Mr. Wonderful, potentially coming into the hobby space. I'm sure we both saw the Instagram Live of him breaking a box of 2018 National Treasures basketball, which is, you know, just $15,000 with Shine 150, of course. Your thoughts on Kevin O'Leary, someone like him coming into the hobby space?
I think it's cool. I think, we've seen so many cool people come into the hobby at this point. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, we've seen like Drake was ripping boxes.
Right. Yeah.
Like athletes ripping boxes is also like surreal to me. Just being so close, you know, like 1 or 2 degrees of separation away from like NBA players and MLB players. And I mean, now Kevin O'Leary, like, I just think all of this adds to the fact that sports cards are very relevant to the average person. And so like, it's exciting. Yeah, man, I just, nothing surprises me at this point, truthfully. I'm going to be honest with you. Nothing surprises me at this point. Like, we've really reached a stage in like the last 4 years where I feel like I've seen everything.
It's amazing.
I feel like it's only a matter of time before like a president starts ripping or, you know, like, I don't know. Like,
some head of state. Yeah, yeah.
Literally, just some just wild stuff.
But, yeah. Well, it's definitely exciting, you know, just where we are as a hobby. And, you know, I feel like the last couple of years we talked about everything kind of settling down, but there's a lot of movement going on in the hobby. So that's exciting for me, at least. And
I couldn't agree more. Yeah.
Yeah. Amazing. Well, Coach Ko, again, thank you so much for your time. Appreciate it. And, you know, hope to run into you into the Sports Card Expo here in Toronto. That'd be great to catch up then.
I'll be there, man. So hit me up. I'll be there for sure. And I'm excited. We've already announced some great guests. You know, Rob Van Dam is going to be there. Dennis Rodman got announced yesterday.
Nice.
You know, there's like Leaf legends like Felix Potvin and Thomas Cabrera. Timo Solheim's coming.
Amazing. So
if you're not coming there just for the athletes, the show itself is going to be bigger and better than it ever has. So it's going to be good.
Can't wait. Just a month away now. Yeah.
Yeah. Exactly. Love it. Thanks for having me.
Okay, another great interview on the podcast. We thank Coach Ko, of course, for coming on, and we appreciate his candor and just his expertise in the hobby. And yeah, we'll hopefully connect with him sooner than later, especially at the Sports Card Expo here in Toronto. All right, let's finish off this episode with our regular weekly segment we call Pick One. All right, so Hyun, it's just you and I today. Do you want to start things off today? This is where, for new listeners, both of us will choose two cards or two players, and then we debate which one we would rather invest in.
Awesome. I'll start off with Aaron Judge, actually. And I think he's going to, just seeing what he's been doing in the short amount of time, I mean, he keeps this up for a few more years. I mean, he's going to be, you know, putting some, you know, numbers up there, right? Just career numbers wise, war, sure. His war is starting to climb up really quick. And I think with Soto there, I don't know, you know, who's going to benefit who, right? So Judge could benefit from this because Soto draws a lot of walks. You know, Judge hitting behind him. I think it's a really good lefty righty combination. So I think Judge might have some opportunity. So I'm looking at some Bowman Chrome. Obviously, you know, you're a huge fan. So I'm going to go back. I know you bought in on a refractor pretty good, and you made some good profit on that Aaron Judge hype in the 62 home run season. So I'm going to pair just the base Bowman Chrome. So that I believe that comes from 2013 Bowman draft, Bowman Chrome draft. It's Aaron Judge auto, a 9.5. So BGS 9.5, autograph 10. It has one 10 sub grade, and then two 9.5s, and the corners are 9. That recently sold for $1,500. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to pair that up with a 2017 Topps Heritage Real One Auto, a PSA 10, Aaron Judge. It sold for $1,600.
This is the blue auto.
This is the blue auto. This is not the red ink. This is just the regular base auto, I guess, that Topps Heritage, the Real One Autos. But it is a classic card, but... You know, I know you're a Bowman Chrome guy, so I'm going to see where that line is. If you had $1,600 to invest, would you invest in a PSA 10 2017 Topps Heritage Real One Autograph or the Bowman Chrome BGS 9.5 for $1,500?
This is a good one, but it's easy for me because, A, I'm a Bowman Chrome guy. I love Heritage, too. We've, you know, both love Heritage. We talked about it on previous podcasts, so I do like Heritage. I have nothing against it. But Bowman Chrome is still number one in terms of baseball rookie card collecting. Mm-hmm. And for me, the PSA 10 versus BGS 9.5, I mean, again, I'm a Beckett guy, and I think there's more value in BGS graded cards, especially now where PSA 10 still has that premium. We've talked about that on previous episode as well, how it's kind of silly that PSA has certain premiums attached to them. So for me, it's fairly easy. If it's around $1,500-$1,600 for both, I love the Bowman Chrome. I'll take the base. And the reason why I asked if the Heritage was red ink, I'm sure it would have cost a lot more.
Right.
But since they're both not numbered, essentially, I'm going to still default to the Bowman Chrome card.
Interesting. I'm actually going to go with the Heritage on this one.
Oh.
I'm actually going to buy the grade.
Okay, why?
I honestly, I didn't check the pop number, pop count, so I should have checked that. But let me quickly check it really quick. Mm-hmm. I gotta check this. I want to see what we have here. But I assume that it's a lot lower. The card itself, I'm not a huge fan of Heritage in 2017, but I know that just based on like Ohtani's, you know, even Real One Auto, the demand for it gets pretty. I guess high. It's a pop 98. So it's definitely going to be lower than the Bowman Chrome. But I think with the PSA 10, I think if Judge does go off, I think that PSA 10, people would pay a premium for that. And, you know, when you look at those peak prices of those kind of like spikes, I think that's a good time to sell the grade, really. So I'm going to go, I just think that you could probably make more money off of that Real One Auto at one point, as opposed to a BGS 9.5. If it was just a raw card to raw card, definitely. I think I'm going to go with the Bowman Chrome, but in this instance, I'm going to actually take the PSA 10.
Interesting. Okay. Oh, I would have never predicted that, but I do like the Aaron Judge as a kind of a sneaky player. I know it's not like super sneaky because Aaron Judge is a stud. But all eyes and attention are on Juan Soto coming to a new team, right?
And it's going to benefit Judge just as much.
Yeah, 100%. That's where I was going for sure. So I like that. Okay, I'm going to go with baseball for my pick one. And I'm going to go with Shohei. I feel like we talk a lot about Shohei, but maybe we didn't talk about him last episode. So we're like having Shohei withdrawals. But it's going to be big money here, okay? I'm going to talk about Shohei's 2018 Bowman Chrome, his pitching, you know, the one that everyone wants.
Yeah.
But the Atomic Refractor, which is numbered to 100. And it's the BGS 9.5 as well in terms of the grade. It sold a couple of days ago, since as of this recording, for $23,000.
Wow.
All right, 23 even. And then I'm going to put that up against Shohei Ohtani's 2018 Topps Chrome. You know, the one where he's kind of in his red jersey with the bat. I used to have it, the base version.
Yeah, yeah.
So that card, but gold, numbered to 50, of course. Also BGS 9.5. And that sold yesterday for $18,500. So which one would you rather have if you had that money just lying around? Would you have made the purchase for... made the atomic refractor purchase for $23,000 or the gold refractor Topps Chrome for $18,500. So it's Bowman Chrome versus Topps Chrome, atomic versus gold, both BGS 9.5.
So obviously the years are the same. So that's something to note. It's not, Ohtani's a special case where it's not, he didn't, wasn't drafted or anything, and he had a first Bowman Chrome and went through the minors. Right. It was all, so it's kind of like even where I don't think Bowman Chrome necessarily, I guess, should outshine Topps Chrome in the way it usually does. And right. I think that's the reason why Ohtani's Topps Chrome is selling for so high, is because there's really no other choice, really, in terms of autos, rookie autos. There's either your Bowman Chrome, your Bowman, your original Bowman. I believe the pitching one you're talking about came out of the original Bowman set as a Chrome auto. And then they had Bowman Chrome, which is his batting auto, which was his summer release. So that's technically his second card. And then they have the Topps Chrome in the fall release, which is the gold one you're referring to. So like just based off that, it kind of changes things regularly than what I would have did with Judge, for instance, where his 2013 right. Bowman Chrome versus his 2017 Topps Chrome, right? So with that said, I still think his pitching card, his image, is going to be his grail. Like, that is on the next level. And a numbered one is like, we're talking bases go for 10 Gs. So for me, it's like Topps Chrome, it's an amazing card. I think there's a lot of underrated Ohtani cards, like the even Topps Chrome Sapphire Autos. I think they're a special card, but like when you're comparing it to the Bowman, like pitching image, I think there's no argument. I'd rather pay the premium. If I'm already dropping 20 G's on Ohtani, what's three more $1,000 in getting the card you kind of want for Ohtani at that price point? So I'm going to go atomic Bowman 2018 Bowman Chrome rookie auto.
After, you know, just saying how, like, you know, the differences aren't as big between Bowman Chrome and Topps Chrome for Shohei Ohtani, you know, you convinced me to go for Topps Chrome. I'm like, okay, that's, and then you kind of flip it, and you're like, oh, I'm still going for Bowman Chrome.
But that's so how like, strong that first Bowman release is for Ohtani.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, so I don't know if this makes a difference for you, but if you look at previous sales in August of 2023, so about half a year before that, it sold for $26,400. So it's come down to $23,000.
Right.
Right. But of May that same year, it was $18,000. So it's kind of fluctuating, went up and then down just a little bit, not as far down as.
So you could either tank, you could either tank or go up again.
Back up, right? Exactly. We don't know which way it's going to go. Whereas I did an IG reel on that Topps Chrome Gold just recently,
right?
And that's been steadily increasing, crazy, without a drop, right? So it's like 15.5, 16.5, now to 18.5.
And I seen what you did with like the gold, true gold versus atomic, where people are like, meh, atomic. Right. But Shohei's an asterisk.
Fair enough.
Hobby Logic doesn't count for him.
That's fair. I'm still going with the gold. True gold. Really? I love it. And that's a surprise to me too, because, you know, we just talked about Aaron Judge and this Bowman Chrome versus Heritage. But I'm kind of like having, you know,
remorse now.
Yeah, it's like not buyer's remorse. What's the opposite? Like seller's regret, you know, with our trading away that base. And, you know, like the close-up, you could actually see his face in the Topps Chrome more so than the Bowman Chrome image, the pitching image anyway. And the true gold, right, out of 50. So that was a clincher for me. And it's $5,000 cheaper right now. So I'm going to go with the Topps Chrome Gold in this case, surprisingly. All right. That's another fun episode of Cards to the Moon. We're glad you guys joined us. And yeah, we'll have a brand new episode for you. I believe we have a Friday episode coming up soon. All right. Talk to you then. Bye.
Hey, thanks for listening to Cards to the Moon. We'd really appreciate you subscribing to our podcast wherever you listen to your podcasts. And you can also connect with each of us on Instagram at @5cardguys, or you can follow Hyung at Integrity Sports Cards, or John at TradeU at Recess. You can also check us out at 5cardguys.com. Thanks again, and hope to connect soon.